fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Howdy. It is Friday the 13th in 2020. Man, oh man, oh man. We gotta pray. Hey, we're Catholics. We don't believe in that stuff. We don't believe in that stuff. Don't worry, it's gonna be a great show. Although, I must tell you, I just saw on my call screen about 2 seconds ago, Dennis Rodman was trying to call in. I don't think it was the Dennis Rodman, but it could be a good or bad omen, depending on how you want to look at it. Maybe he's going to call and update us on his negotiations with North Korean leadership, as he is well known to do. Anyways, welcome to the show. So glad you're with us. Hope you had a great week. Hope you had a great week. And it's time to decompress. It's the weekend now. You're with your friend Cale Clark, and I'm so glad to be with you. Give me a call, 1-888-914-9149. You know, if you're looking for a theme for your Catholic life, you can do a lot worse than this one. Stewardship. And we talked about this on the show yesterday, ever so briefly I alluded to it. My friend Cardinal Thomas Collins, the Archbishop of Toronto, he likes to talk about this. This is kind of his theme for ministry and his theme for life. Stewardship. We all want to hear those words from our Lord, right? Well done, good and faithful servant. So we have to have good stewardship of three things: our time, our talents, and our treasure. I want to talk about the first one tonight, time, stewardship of time. And if you've had a rough week at work, we're going to kind of examine how you're spending your time a little bit. And hopefully by next week, when Monday rolls around, you'll be ready to go to have your greatest week, maybe ever, work-wise in your entire life. And how is that even possible during these crazy COVID times of Zoom meetings and working from home in the basement and all that sort of stuff? Well, we looked at an interesting article the other day, and unfortunately, I was only able to touch on it for just a couple of moments because we ran out of time. So I wanted to revisit it today. A really interesting piece that I read on rescuetime.com about what your new normal, your quote-unquote new normal workday should look like in these times, and how you can make it more productive and more effective. And that's going to be good for us because our work is, you know, can be a prayer for us, of course, and we have to glorify God in our work, really in everything that we do. As St. Paul says in his letters, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. And so we want to glorify God with our time, which has been entrusted to us. And part of a big chunk of that time, obviously, of our lives is spent at work. So how can we make that better and give God more glory through it? Well, in this really interesting article by Jory McKay, he talks about how this, you know, we've had to all adjust to these COVID times and this really massive social experiment that we're all a part of. We're kind of the guinea pigs, the lab rats, if you will, in this social experiment of, you know, working remotely, using tools like Zoom to connect, not being in a physical office. And here's the deeper question that we should be asking ourselves. What should our typical workday look like when there's no need for commuting, there's no need for a regular 9-to-5 schedule, and there are no open plan offices, which could be a good thing because the guy in the next cubicle isn't, you know, shooting spitballs at you through his straw or whatever the case may be, stealing your food out of the fridge, eating your lunch. That's horrible. If you work in an office like that, isn't that, it's nice to not be there, isn't it? But, and I have had people like that. I have had coworkers. Oh, I didn't know that was yours. It didn't have your name on it. I just thought it was up for grabs. Yeah, right. Anyways, so here's some interesting findings from this article. The 8-hour workday, the classic 8-hour workday, allegedly should not be part of your new normal. Because Cal Newport has written some really interesting books, and I've talked about him on the show briefly before. He's the author of the book Deep Work, Digital Minimalism, which is one of his recent books, So Good They Can't Ignore You. He's also written a bunch of books for students. So if you have students in your household, you might want to check these out. He's written a book about how to succeed in high school, how to succeed in college while still having, you know, a semblance of a life and being well organized. And he's really, really good at this. He's a professor at Georgetown University in computer science. And it's really interesting because he is a technological nerd. He's a millennial guy, but he doesn't use social media. He's never had a social media account. And in fact, I turned Lucas on, producer Lucas Holt, to one of his talks, which you can see on YouTube. It's called Quit Social Media, which is a TED talk that he gave. It's really quick, really short, but it's really powerful on why you should quit social media. And part of that has to do with our production during the day. So I want to just play you a brief clip from that talk.
There's two things I can report back to you from the world of no social media use. First, it can be quite productive. So I'm a professor at a research institution. I've written 5 books. I rarely work past 5 p.m. on the weekday. Part of the way I'm able to pull that off is because it turns out if you treat your attention with respect, so you don't fragment it, you allow it to stay whole, you preserve your ability to concentrate, when it comes time to work, you can actually do one thing after another and do it with intensity. And intensity can be traded for time. It's surprising how much you can get done in an 8-hour day if you're able to give each thing intense concentration after another.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting point by Cal Newport. And here's the thing, and this is what this article I was reading really pointed out to me. Almost nobody is actually working for 8 hours a day. And if you know somebody who's working in an office or if you worked in an office environment, you have to admit that's probably the case. Nobody is actually working productively, at least, for 8 hours a day. They may be actually clocking that amount of time, but are they really working for 8 hours a day? You're listening to The Caleb Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Give me a call if you want to react to any of this, 1-888-914-9149, or tweet at me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. So the deal is that the studies, surveys from around the world have shown that modern workers are only truly productive for a maximum, get this, and this actually surprised me, a maximum of only 2 hours and 50 minutes a day. That's somewhat less, just a shade less than 3 hours a day. So what about the other 5 hours or more? They are spent on non-work activities, reading the news, maybe watching the Masters. Maybe some of you did that today. Maybe you were quote-unquote working from home by watching the Masters. I actually didn't, believe it or not. I couldn't believe it, so I'll catch up later. I was working, man. I was working. But most of the time, people are spending these other 5.5 hours or more on social media, socializing with coworkers, at the water cooler or whatever, taking breaks, or multitasking. A lot of their work hours are lost to multitasking, trying to do all this different stuff at the same time, returning phone calls, looking at email, maybe responding to a Slack message, if you will, which is a means of communication, an app that's being used more and more in modern companies and workplaces. Endless meetings. Oh man, we all love meetings, don't we? So that's what's being done in the other 5 hours. So the actual amount of work, actual work, is only 2 hours and 50 minutes a day. And also, surveys have found this, that the quality of your work and your happiness drops sharply after a certain number of hours worked in a day or in a week. Stanford University put out a study, and they showed that output and creativity sharply decline after 50 hours of work in a week. And if you try to work more, like, I really got to get this thing done, so I'm going to work at it even more, it gets worse. If you have a 70-hour work week, you're likely to produce absolutely nothing of value in those extra 15 to 20 hours. So one thing we can get from this is that you need a Sabbath. You need to stop working when it's time to stop working. And again, we talked yesterday about these heroic minutes, right? We were talking about Acedia, and we had a huge reaction to that show yesterday, just an incredible amount of calls and messages about this show. I was really surprised. It's a topic that really resonated with people. And so this idea of the heroic minute, getting up when it's time to get up and working and praying when it's time to do those things, and also stopping work is really important. You need a Sabbath to not only reconnect with others in our lives outside of work, especially God. And hopefully we're connecting with God in our work too, but you need a Sabbath. And also each day you need to take a sort of a mini Sabbath. So that's really important. You're not going to get anything really more productive. And Cal Newport talked about that in a little soundbite, that he accomplishes a lot, but he very rarely will he work past 5 p.m. That sounds like something, I don't know about you, but that sounds like something I'd want to, incorporate. And I want to get better at, I want to be more productive yet, be able to have a more balanced life. So here's another thing that studies have found. Our focus in terms of like when we're really trying to get this deep work done, this really focused, intense work, our focus is limited to blocks. And that block can be, depending on you and your situation, it could be 20 up to 90 minutes max. So your ability to focus deeply, for some people, it's only 20 minutes at a time. That's all they can handle. Others can go up to 90 on the regular, but that's the limit of your focus. And after that, you've got to take some sort of a break. You have to take a break because the mind, the brain, and this is a really good point from the article, the brain is more like a muscle than a computer. And I thought that was a really interesting point. You can't load it up with tasks without giving it breaks and proper time to recover. Think about working out. If you go to the gym, if you can even get into a gym during COVID, but you've all had the experience of at least doing a push-up, hopefully, at least trying to do a few push-ups. You can't just continually keep doing that. You can't just continually keep doing bicep curls. And maybe Patrick Alog can, our call screener. He's a big, you know, sports fan. So maybe he can, you know, do bicep curls, you know, as he's answering phone calls here on the Gale Clark Show. Give us a call. He'll answer with one hand with a dumbbell on the other. 1-888-914-9149. You can't just keep doing that. You've got to do it in sets. You've got to take a break. That's how, you know, weightlifting works. That's how exercise works. Your brain is not a computer that can just run like a machine forever. You've got to take a break. You can't load it up with tasks and expect it to just keep trucking. And that's what we try to do sometimes at work. We try to, you know, spend hours and hours and hours on one task, and it's highly unlikely that all of those time, you know, all that time put together is super productive. So you need to take a bit of a break. And most people require a break about every 50 to 90 minutes at the most, okay? That's about the maximum amount of time that you can, you know, work without taking a break. And your body, your brain has something called ultradian rhythms, which I'd never heard of before. Ultradian rhythms. I guess it sounds a lot to me like circadian rhythms, right? We got to sleep at a certain time. You know, we get used to those patterns. And your brain needs that break every 90 minutes or so. And if you don't take a break, you will take a break inadvertently. If it's not intentional, you'll take a mental smoke break. You'll just check out. You know, imagine listening to a long lecture at university or a big presentation at work. If it's too long, you can't physically pay attention for that long, especially in this day and age, because our attention spans are so much worse than they used to be. Have you ever tried reading the Gettysburg Address, you know, in print form and wonder, did people actually sit through this? And like, were they like totally into it the whole time? Modern people probably couldn't stomach that because, again, we're used to these interruptions and you know, we have these brains that are so fried with electronic impulses and stimuli that we can't really focus for that long. So you got to take breaks. You got to take breaks. There's this program, I don't know if you've heard of it, it's called the Pomodoro Technique. I don't know if you've ever tried this, but it involves working intensely for 25 minutes at a time and then taking a 5-minute break and then going back and working for another 25 minutes and then taking a 5-minute break. That's how some people do it. There are all these apps that are out there that you can download that are Pomodoro apps. It's a technique that was developed. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's one technique that could work. Other people think, no, it's better to go for like 45 or a straight 90 and then take a break after that time. But whatever you choose, whatever works for you best, you've got to take breaks. You've got to work that in. And it'll help you to focus better when you work. So working fewer hours also is linked to higher output, creativity, and even health. Even health. So this is interesting. We all want to work hard. We all want to work well, but we don't want to waste our time at work either by working poorly and not really working well. So this is interesting. So we can cut some hours out of our workday possibly, and this may be really good for you if you're working from home especially, and you can still hit your deadlines. You can still make meaningful contributions, stay connected, and it's been shown to increase your productivity, make you more creative, and actually make you even physically healthier. So I don't know if that sounds good to you or not, but it sounds good to me. And in just a couple minutes, we're going to tell you how to actually make that happen, some actionable steps that you can take. But right now, we're going to go to the phones. Bonnie is calling. Oh, is it time for a break? No, it's not time for a break yet. We got time, right, Lucas? Bonnie is calling. Bonnie's on the phone calling from Murrieta, California. How are you, Bonnie? Welcome.
Oh, I'm fine. This is the first time I've ever called your program. I was sitting at my table just adding up my bills and things. I like to know what I paid every month for the whole year. But you said you wanted someone to call in who, because I was a bookkeeper, that's just a thing in my head. And you wanted to know if anybody out there was working more than 8 hours a day. And I was telling the gentleman who answered the phone that my baby sister, who is 55, prayed and prayed and prayed for a job. She's been out of work. She was on unemployment. She didn't want to use all her unemployment in case something happened and we got locked down again. So she just kept praying and saying, you know, Lord, help me get a job. Well, she finally got a job. They called her on a Tuesday, and she started working the very next day, and she's working 40 hours a week.
That is great. That is great. Praise God. Thanks for that. That's really a really encouraging thing, Bonnie. I'm glad you mentioned that because, yeah, and if you're out there, if you're looking for work, pray to St. Joseph. Ask St. Joseph to help you. St. Joseph the worker, he will help you. And that's a really encouraging story, Bonnie. And I'm glad you called. Thank you for calling. You're a first-time caller listening. Hopefully you'll be a long-time listener and a frequent caller calling from Murrieta, California.
Yeah, I've been leaving my radio on pretty much of the day. You know, I got a beautiful a light, kind of like a, not a blanket, but a light. A light, thin blanket from the Padre Pio Foundation. And it's Padre Pio praying in front of the crucifix, and it says, pray, hope, and don't worry. So what I did is I didn't want to watch TV so much anymore this week, so I've been putting that over my TV until at least 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening.
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea.
I'm looking at that instead of my television. Yeah, I just really was watching too much television, being, you know, home a lot, you know.
That's a good point. Yeah, this can be a big temptation for us, especially when we're home a lot more than we were used to being, is spending too much time with all kinds of media. But you can never spend enough time with relevant radio, right? Right.
I'm watching nice things, but I just felt like I was like melting into my recliner. I can't do this, you know.
Well, that's true because it's very passive, right? Like it's very passive when we're watching something like that. We're just kind of taking it in. It's a little bit different, I think, when you're listening to programs that are on relevant radio, other great programming, because it hopefully will make you think a little bit. And hopefully we've done that a little bit for you on the Cale Clark Show. So that was Bonnie calling from Murrieta, California. Bonnie, thank you so much for the call. Up against a break right now, so we've got to go, but we'll be right back. And I'm going to give you some actionable steps for how to take control of your new workday and still get stuff done. All right, we'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show. The Relevant Radio Studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans is available at relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the show. Hey, that's music from The Weeknd. Lucas, producer Lucas, spinning some tunes from The Weeknd, because it is The Weeknd on The Cale Clark Show. Hey, The Weeknd's Canadian, too. Did you know that? He's from Toronto. How about that? Don't know him. Can't get any money or anything from him. But listen, I'll tell you this. I'm excited about this weekend. I'm really excited because as a golf fan, I'm super excited to watch the Masters in November. It's just an incredibly big bonus for me as the days get shorter and the days get darker and drearier. We've got Augusta National and all its beauty, and I can't wait to watch that this weekend. So we'll have a little Masters update later in the show. But we were talking about how to improve our work days and actually produce more by maybe working less, by just making better use of our time, not wasting time, and working more intensely, using different tips to do that. So here, I promised you before the break that I would show you how to do that a little bit. How do we do this? And that's the big question people ask. Okay, yeah, we know we should maybe not work so much. Some of us are workaholics and we work maybe too many hours. We're not spending enough time with our family or you know, God or sharing our faith with our friends. Friendships are really important in life. Our hobbies, golf, it's not a waste of time. Trust me, it's not a waste of time. I'm trying to convince people of this, especially my wife. Anyways, if you can get your spouse to golf with you, that's always good because then you can spend time together on the course to kill two birds with one stone. All right, now back to the topic. How to build your new normal workday and still get your tasks done and done well and done even better. Well, here's what you need to do. You've got to take a step-by-step process into account. And this article I was reading, again, from rescuetime.com by Jory McKay, talks about you need to start by understanding what your productivity now looks like, because what gets measured gets improved. Seems to make sense, right? What gets measured gets improved. If you want to save money, you start tracking your spending so you can make a budget. If you want more efficient work days, you need to track your time. You need to track your time. Now, there are a lot of time tracking apps that you can get out there. And if you go to the App Store, I'm sure you'll find a lot of them. But you can also do it good old-fashioned analog style by taking a pen and piece of paper or a pencil and write down. I want you to write down a couple of things, okay? This will really help you. Number one, I want you to write down what your ideal day looks like, okay? If you could, like, have your druthers, right? If you could, this is how I want tomorrow to go. This is how I want to spend my time tomorrow, right? I want to get my prayer in. I want to, you know, go to daily mass if it's possible. I want to, you know, make sure I get those big rocks in the jar before all the sand gets poured in, all the little things. I want to work on X project for so much time tomorrow. I want to get this done. What is your ideal work day? What does it look like? Is there time for exercise in there somewhere? Golf, you know, I'm just kidding. You know, so write that down. What is your ideal day? And then try to make it happen. That's one thing. But you also have to write down what's actually happening. Without judgment, just track your time, okay? Write down everything that you're working on in 10-minute increments and how long you're actually working most days. It's actually going to be lower than you think it should be. It's actually going to be lower than you think. And that's fine. That's fine. Because again, one of the things that these researchers have found is that even if you think you're working for 8 hours a day, you're actually not, because you're actually spending time on other things. So if you're actually writing down how you're spending your time, you'll find out that you're probably only, quote unquote, working for about 4 to 5 hours a day max. All right. The next thing you need to look at is, when in the day are you most productive? When are you most productive? That's really, really important to know. Just knowing yourself, you know thyself, that's such a great commandment. Who said that? Socrates, Plato, Aristotle? I forget. One of the great philosophers, right? Lucas probably knows. You can whisper in my ear, Lucas, so I don't get this wrong. But you got to know thyself, right? And one of the things that I've found out over the last little while is when in the day I am most productive, you know, when I'm most alert, when my brain is functioning really well, that's when you want to really work on those, you know, important projects to you. So if you're Socrates said that, okay, we know what happened to him, right? So, you've got to know, like, if you're a writer and you're trying to write a book, let's say, you're going to want to spend your time writing when you're most productive, right? So what is your sort of golden hour during the day, or that period of time during the day where you're the most focused, the most alert? Think about that. And you know what's best for you. Some people come alive more in the evening or in the afternoon, whatever. Some are morning people. You'll know. So know what your optimal work hours are. And then you need to write down, when you're talking about how you spend your time, note the time that you're spending on that core work, that most important task, that most important work that you need to do, whether it's, you know, you're a computer programmer, you're coding, if you're an interior designer, when are you actually designing? You know, if you're an accountant, when are you actually crunching the numbers? Again, you'll find out that the time that you're spending on your core work is probably lower than you think. And again, the end game of all this is to glorify God more, to give more glory to God by working better in His service, no matter what we're doing, no matter what our job is. The next thing you need to look at in terms of your time is how much time you're spending in communication, How much time are you spending on email, chat, you know, messages, iMessages, you know, other types of messaging services, Slack, meetings? These are things that can make your workday just balloon. And you're going to want to try to reduce those things. And the last thing, when are your most distracted hours in the day? When are you losing focus? When do you find your mind wandering? Because you can't be 100% locked in laser all day, right? Know when you're most likely to be distracted. And that's when you want to schedule your breaks or just cut those hours out of your day completely when it comes to your workday. So that's step number one. Take note of your time. Take charge of your time. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. You can email us, cale@relevantradio.com. You can tweet at the show, @CaleClarkShow, or at my personal account, @CaleClark. If you have questions about this, we've got a Twitter question up there that Lucas put up. Are you feeling more anxious because of things like email, apps, all the stuff that we're dealing with in our workday? Or you can call the show, 1-888-914-9149. Toll free, calls on me. So that's number one, figure out how you're spending your time, because what you measure, you can actually improve. And then the other thing is, you've got to rewire your brain a little bit. That's step number two. So when you see your personal data, when you see how you're actually spending your time, and again, when you write it down, no judgment, just write down what you're actually doing and then look at it later. That's a light bulb moment for a lot of people. And if you're working for 8 hours a day, you're probably lucky if you get 2 or 2.5 hours of time in those 8 hours for your most important task. But that's okay. That's okay. Alex Pang, who wrote a book called Rest, Why You Get More Done When You Work Less, said this, and I quote, 2 hours where you can really get into the problem yields solutions that are going to be better than if you spent 10 hours broken up by meetings, bouncing around on, you know, social media, email, Slack channels, that sort of thing. So a focused 2 hours on a problem or a task will get you way more than an unfocused 10 hours. And I think that's true. The ability to focus is the key. That is the key. In fact, some researchers say that one highly focused hour is up to 500% more productive than 1 hour where you bounce between all these tasks and emails, calls, messages. So focused time working is so huge. So one thing you can do is block. When you're sitting down to work on these important tasks, shut off your Wi-Fi. That's one thing you can do. If you don't need it to get the work done, if you're working on, you know, a computer program or something, you don't need Wi-Fi, turn off your Wi-Fi. Or, you know, there are things that you can do on your phone where you don't get notifications. You can turn off notifications on your phone. There are apps that you can use. There's one called Focus Time that you can get that will block distracting websites that tempt you to look at them. If you're tempted to look at ESPN all day, for example, it'll block that website during certain times. Keep your phone on Do Not Disturb mode or airplane mode. There's so many things that you can do to focus better during that period of time. So that's it. Here's another thing you need to do that you can rewire your brain to help you focus better is, and this is an interesting thing, if you want to train your brain to focus for longer times, you can actually go outside without your device. Go outside without your phone for a period of time. Go for a walk. We talked about going for walks yesterday. There was a lady who called in who talked about going for a walk with her husband to pray the rosary. And that was a great thing. And she actually prays the Family Rosary Across America every night on Relevant Radio while she's walking. And that helps her in a lot of ways. Helps her to get more fit. Helps her to focus on her prayers so she's not distracted. And she's listening with Father Rocky and Karen Moran and the Family Rosary Across America, which is going to happen later tonight in just a couple of hours on Relevant Radio. So stay tuned. So the studies have found that when both adults and children were sent outdoors without their devices for a period of time, after 4 days, their performance jumped through the roof by 50%. When they were doing tasks that required creativity and problem solving, their ability to do it went up by 50%. So even just taking one walk outside significantly improves your creativity. And Cal Newport talks about this a lot. I saw him give an interview in which he talks about going for walks around his neighborhood. He just doesn't take his phone with him. and he just goes and walks the dog, and he walks all around the neighborhood. And his neighbors actually started like asking his wife, "Is everything okay?" Like, he's constantly taking walks, you know. Like, are you guys fighting? And he has to get out of the house. So he just does that to think, and he says it's incredible how he's got these problems that he's dealing with at work or in other areas. And when your brain is kind of turned off doing another activity, you're not thinking about the problem directly, you find the answer. It'll come to you somehow. It'll you somehow subconsciously are able to work through these things when you're out taking a walk. So it's good to do other activities. It's not good to be, quote unquote, working all the time. And ironically, it'll help you work better when it's time to work. Here's another thing. An interview was done with 850 knowledge workers, people that are, you know, working in, you know, fields of work where it's all about their knowledge. So it's not like a manual labor or something like that. It's just a different type of work, knowledge workers. So they found that people who work for more than 8 hours a day, a knowledge worker, all right, they are 3 times as likely to say that they have too much work than those who work 5 hours a day or less. So that's interesting. So working 8 hours a day or more, they say they have too much work. But then if they work 5 hours, they say it's okay. So I think, again, this comes down to a lack of priorities, a lack of clear priorities. So that's another thing. You've got to know, once you know what work is truly important, what your most important tasks are, it's easy to then set aside that time for it. But the opposite is true too. And I don't know if this has happened to you, but it actually happened to me a little bit today because my schedule got thrown off kilter. And it wasn't a normal day because my normal schedule, the way I work and things that I have to do, I got thrown for a loop. And I was uncertain at times what I was supposed to be doing at that moment. So when you're uncertain about your priorities, it's easier to spend your day on low value activities like email or, you know, meetups or chatting or something like that. So you got to be clear on your priorities. And again, try to schedule your day around your peak productive hours, whatever time of day that you work the best, you're most alert, you're most into it, most able to lock in without distraction. Schedule your day so you're spending a bulk of your time working on projects during that time. Because it's when you work is almost as important as how much you work. Your energy levels are really, really important, okay? So there you go. If you're able to do this, if you're able to implement some of these things, you're going to get more done than a lot of people get done in 10 hours, you know, a day. Remember those army commercials from days gone by? You know, we do more before 6 a.m. than most people do in a whole day. You know, you can be like that. You can be like that. So that's it. Set limits on your communication time. I just want to mention two more things here real quick. And then we'll take your call. Just some callers coming through. 1-888-914-9149. Okay, all this sort of distracting type of communication, like email, text messages from work, things like that. Try to batch those into one block of time during the day, whether it's at the, you know, check it once at the beginning of the day, check it again, you know, if you have to check it at lunchtime or maybe at the end of the day. During specific times of the day, this is when I do my communication. So maybe it's between like 4 and 5 p.m. at the end of the day. I don't know what'll work for you. This is called bursty communication. So you do it in bursts. So you alternate between times of deep work and times of deep conversation. And this is interesting. So you don't try to like do all the conversation stuff in the midst of your work because you're going to get, you know, discombobulated. You're going to be spread too thin. Your brain's going to be everywhere. It's not good. So separate those things. And again, make sure that you take your rest, take your Sabbath. It's the weekend now. And you need to take your Sabbath. You need that. Not only the Sabbath was made for people, not people for the Sabbath, right? Remember, that's what the Lord said. So this is God's gift to you so that, you know, you can be, you know, well rested for the work that you have to do, that God is expecting you to do. And in order for us to do that well, we need to get away from it. We'll do better at it when we come back to it. So rest is good. Rest is good. And rest doesn't mean doing nothing. You know, I'm sure Father Rocky would tell you this, because St. Jose Maria talked about this all the time. Rest isn't doing nothing. It's just changing your focus to a different type of activity. That's it. So give yourself permission to rest. Schedule in your downtime and your hobbies, just as you would schedule in important work meetings, right? Schedule in that time with your family, those, you know, date nights with your wife, or those times with your children and your friends. That's important to do. So I'll close with this. 90 years ago, the philosopher Bertrand Russell wrote in Harper's Magazine, this is 90 years ago when life was, I would say, probably a lot simpler then in many ways. 90 years ago, Bertrand Russell wrote this in Harper's Magazine on the importance of idleness, rest, and not chasing after endless productivity. And he said this, and I quote, "There was formerly a capacity for lightheartedness and play, which has been to some extent inhibited by the cult of efficiency." That's an interesting line. There used to be a capacity for lightheartedness and play, which has been to some extent inhibited by the cult of efficiency. The modern man thinks that everything ought to be done for the sake of something else and never for its own sake. End of quote. Man, that's a lot to process, but I really like that. Not everything we do has to be for the sake of efficiency or for the sake of getting this done or that done. Sometimes things can be done just for their own sake. And I think that's where golf comes in for me. You know, just, you know, even just the idea of sports, you know, like, you know, does it really matter? Not really, not in the grand scheme of things, but for its own sake, if it's something that you enjoy, why not? Why not? Sometimes we're too busy for our own good. And play, don't forget, C.S. Lewis said, play is the serious business of heaven. Ha, huh. There you go. All right, we're going to go to the phones right now. John is calling from Clifton, New Jersey. John, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you. I was listening to your suggestions, and I absolutely mm-hmm. agree with that. And throughout my career at my one location there, I have taken the time at 10:30, get up and walk. Mm-hmm. Lunchtime, go out and walk.
Nice.
And, of course, say a couple prayers and decompress. But you know what? Even though you're decompressing, you never know when you're lying in bed, you know, the mm-hmm. brain goes off and says, you got to do that email at 2:30 in the morning. So I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, sometimes that does happen.
I want to add that because, you know, like if it's on a Saturday night and you wake up at 2:30 and it's really related to work, I'd rather mm-hmm. do it on Saturday night rather than on Sunday to keep a day of rest. Mm-hmm. I did want to add that point, but so.
Yeah, and I do think there's times when we're not at work and something will hit us related to work, and this is part of this whole subconscious. I think there's some evidence for this, and I'm sure there's been studies done on this that when we get away from the task or the problem, if we're just like, you know, trying to, you know, fight through this issue or problem or vexing, you know, whatever at work, and we can't just figure it out. Sometimes just getting away and doing something else. Subconsciously, you know, we're hit with an inspiration and somehow the answer comes. And yeah, sometimes, you know what, you do get, you know, this, I've got to email this guy. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. And maybe that's the time when you got to do it. I don't know. I mean, that's not a regular occurrence, obviously, but I go ahead.
I've heard that, you know, you have, like an early birds or, you know, what is it? The term, whether you do a late person or an early person,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe I fluctuate between the two. I don't know. Anyway, I just wanted to add my comment about that.
Yeah, and,
it's absolutely true. Getting up and taking a walk is unbelievably helpful.
Oh, it is.
It's breath, and you're deep in your lungs and or deep in your belly, and what a relief. It takes a while to find the decompression, but it definitely mm-hmm. does help.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for that call. That was John calling from Clifton, New Jersey, listening to the program there. And yeah, I agree with that. And you know, we are a body-soul unity, right? So we do have to take care of our body. And sometimes, you know, taking a walk, you know, has a lot of benefits, not only physically, but also mentally, and can help us in our work. And so, yeah, I like that call. Very important. We're going to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show. We'll be right back. If you want to give us a call, 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. Talk to you in a minute.
Explaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's the Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
Hey, welcome back to the show. So glad to have you with us on this Friday the 13th. But don't be afraid. I'm here for you. Cale Clark. You can call me at 1-888-914-9149. So we talked in the past a few minutes about how to work better, more efficiently, and have a more balanced life. And part of that might involve, you know, obviously you want to get away from social media when you're supposed to be working, but you might want to think about downgrading it even more than that, maybe even cutting it out of your life completely. Cal Newport, once again, here's a clip from his talk, Quit Social Media, his TED Talk.
I argued that social media tools are designed to be addictive. The actual design, desired use case of these tools is that you fragment your attention as much as possible throughout your waking hours. That's how these tools are designed to use. Well, we have a growing amount of research which tells us that if you spend large portions of your day in a state of fragmented attention, so large portions of your day where you're constantly breaking up your attention, take a quick glance, do a just check, let me just quickly look at Instagram, that this can permanently reduce your capacity for concentration. In other words, you could permanently reduce your capacity to do exactly the type of deep effort that we're finding to be more and more necessary in an increasingly competitive economy. So social media use is not harmless. It can actually have a significant negative impact on your ability to thrive in the economy.
There you go. It can actually have a negative impact on you, not only in your work, but also in life in general. And Inc. magazine just put out a story that there was a 2-year study that was done of more than 5,000 people. And it sounds like, you know, crankiness from academia, but it talks about Facebook and how using Facebook can actually destroy your emotional and physical health. And this is research that was done from Yale, an Ivy League school, and also UC San Diego. And they're basically saying you need to limit the amount of time you spend on Facebook. And, you know, obviously there are other social media networks out there, but these researchers spent 2 years following over 5,000 adults who were part of the study, and they monitored these subjects' Facebook use directly. Rather than asking them to report, you know, oh, how did you use it or how much time do you spend on Facebook? They were actually the ones monitoring it. And by the way, they got permission to do this. They got permission to do it. So people often don't realize how much time they spend on the network, and they checked in with their subjects on how they were doing emotionally, physically, their well-being, also stuff like their body mass index. So they checked on this over the course of 2 years, and overall, the results showed that real-world social networks gave people more well-being. And when I say real-world social networks, I mean actual relationships with people, like that you're actually talking to physically, that you're actually there in their presence. Real social networks were associated with overall well-being, but the use of Facebook was negatively associated with overall well-being. And this research, by the way, came out in the Harvard Business Review. Now, these results were particularly strong in the area of mental health. Most people who were using Facebook predicted that they would have a decrease in mental health, you know, in a future period. So if they started using Facebook, their mental health went down in about a year or so. Yikes. So that's kind of scary. Now, why is it bad for your mental health? Well, it's because this network creates a sort of a false peer pressure. Because most people, being human, they don't necessarily want to post negative experiences on Facebook, right? Like, oh, this terrible thing happened to me, or I'm struggling, or I'm, you know, whatever. They don't want to post this stuff because everybody seems to be doing better than you are and having more fun than you are. And the thing is, like, people's real lives, quote unquote, are not being put on social media. This is a carefully curated version of their lives that's being posted. You know, all the pictures that put them in the best light, the nice places that they've been, you know, all that stuff. You're not seeing them. You know, most people don't post pictures of themselves, you know, first thing in the morning, if you're a lady, you know, without makeup, your hair is frazzled, whatever. You know, your deepest, darkest moments, you're not going to post there in all likelihood. Okay, so when you expose your life and you compare it to what other people are doing, you tend to have a negative self-comparison. Now, what about people might say, hold on, that's not why I'm on Facebook. I'm on Facebook to connect myself to friends and family, even when they're far away and I can't see them all the time. I want to find these long-lost friends and relatives. Well, again, research shows that having a real social circle leads to better health and greater longevity. But it's not the case when it comes to your virtual social life. trying to keep up with the Joneses or keep up with the relatives, it has the opposite effect. Because of increased use of Facebook and other social media, what happens is that your time gets taken up much more, and it can create this illusion of closeness, this illusion that you're close to these people. And so, by the way, the same thing could take place in real terms too. When you're at a live social gathering and you're with people physically, but they're not talking to you. They're looking at their phone. They're looking down at their phone on their lap, and they're checking out people's posts on Facebook or other networks. And that just drives me nuts. And if you are going to restaurants these days, you still see this, like families that go out to eat and they're not talking to each other at all. They're looking at their phones, and this can happen in the home, of course, as well. So just be aware. And, you know, maybe for you, you want to get off of these things completely. Maybe you need to at least limit. They recommend that you limit your use to no more than 1 hour a day, and try to put down your phone, try to connect with the people around you and the real world that actually does exist outside of these screens. So might be something to think about as we move forward. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And I got to tell you, I want to cue the Masters music, please. Lucas, I need to tell you the results of our informal Twitter poll that we took yesterday. I want to announce those results because I was trying to make a case for golf being the most spiritual sport. And it appears I did not make a convincing argument, because 51% of you who took the poll said that baseball was the most spiritual sport. So I guess you agree with my friend Michael Barber. I know that our call screener Patrick Alog is a huge baseball fan. That's the first thing he said. He didn't even know about this poll. He was off yesterday. Ironically, he was playing golf, but he said, oh yeah, it's baseball for sure. Well, I disagree. But anyways, I lost, because golf was number two. 29% said that golf was the most spiritual sport. Basketball only got 6%, football 14%. So there you have it. By the way, while we're on the subject of sports, I got hearty congratulations to Kim Ng. This is back to baseball for a second. Kim Ng has become the first female general manager in professional sports. She is now the GM of the Miami Marlins. I know a lot of you are listening to the program in Miami right now, in Florida. Kim Ng has shattered the glass ceiling, and she's also the first Asian American to hold such a position in professional sports. And she got this job, by the way, because she deserved it. She absolutely deserved it. She has been in baseball for 30 years and has been in front offices. She's worked for the Chicago White Sox organization for 6 years. She was with the Yankees from 98 to 2001, assistant GM there. And she was with the Dodgers from 2002 to 2011. And since that time, she's been working in the commissioner's office until this year. And for her management work, she's helped to win 3 World Series championships. So she knows what she's doing. Believe me, she knows what she's doing. And Miami's just been a mess baseball-wise for years. But hey, maybe Derek Jeter's pulling things together with the Marlins, the captain, you know? He got laughed at a lot, what's been going on down there. But they're on the right track, I think. So congratulations to Kim Ng. I think she'll be the first of many hires, females working in baseball, women working in baseball, women working in sports, in management. So good for you, Kim. That's great news. All right. So who's leading the Masters right now? Tell me, Patrick, who's leading the Masters right now? I've been working, man. I've been busy.
There are 4 leaders right now. Dustin Johnson, Justin mm-hmm. Thomas.
JT.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Abraham Anser from Mexico and Cameron Smith from Australia. 9 under.
Fantastic. No, it's an international leaderboard. Abraham seems to have the answer. Oh, he's leading the turn. Oh, that's a really bad pun, but you know, I'm in the wrong profession. I should have been a sports journalist. Because like almost every sports headline is a pun. You ever notice that? They're really good at that. Anyway, so there you have it. Enjoy the Masters this weekend. It's going to be interesting. I don't know what your weekend plans are, but do take that Sabbath. Do make sure that you take that Sabbath. But don't do this. Don't do this. Producer Lucas Holt sent me this story. I'll just share it with you really, really quickly. The shenanigans that are going on in Yellowstone National Park. I don't know if you know this, but in Yellowstone, there is all kinds of these hot springs, these bubbling, sulfurous hot water. Some people were caught boiling chickens in one of the park's hot springs. I mean, talk about running afoul of the law. I mean, this
no
is just
way.
Yeah, this is
yes
just ridiculous.
Way.
Yeah. Yahweh. Yeah, they sort of tried to cook their own goose, if you will, by doing something a little harebrained. Anyways, this is really unsurprising to people who work in Yellowstone Park. A tour guide who works in the park, he's been there for four decades, and his name was Lee Whitsley. He says that he's seen it all there. All kinds of accidents, people being foolish. One guy tried to take a picture in front of a bison, and the bison actually was trying to be like a matador, and the bison just to charge the guy and send him flying into the air. He survived, thank goodness. But yeah, people are always trying to cook chickens in the hot springs. I mean, really? Like, I guess it's just for the thrill of it, but I don't know. Don't do it. Don't do it. Just go home and don't risk the fine. Don't risk the fine. But do go outside. I encourage you to go outside. Take a walk, as we've been talking about. Go to these national parks. Enjoy yourselves, but don't cook chickens in the hot springs. Don't do it. All right, guys. It's been a great hour. It's been a quick hour. It's been a quick week. Enjoy your weekend. God bless you. Lucas Holt produced. Karen Moran worked social media. Patrick Alog. He's not throwing golf clubs on the course in anger. He's answering the phones very kindly. Take it away, Michaela. We'll see you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.